They stood to attention, dressed in clothes that they were accustomed to wearing in the tavern, the church, and in everyday life. There was absolute silence in those regiments, as can only be demanded from the best disciplined troops. An observation by a defeated British officer.
Comprised of both regular soldiers and militiamen from various New England states, Continental Army's Northern Department exemplified, for its time, what General Mark A. Milley has described as today's total army. This combined force, consisting of regular soldiers and state militias working together, served the same purpose then as now, to answer the nation's call anywhere and anytime with little or no notice. Since the first shot fired by revolutionary colonists in April of 1775, America's pursuit of independence from Britain had teetered back and forth on the edge of failure. But the goal seemed within reach on the morning of October 17, 1777, when Lieutenant General John Burgoyne's British Field Army officially surrendered to the commander of the Continental Army's Northern Department, Major General Horatio Gates. Ironically, the road to this unprecedented American victory began in defeat. Acting on a long-considered but never successfully executed plan, utilizing the route of riverways and lakes known as the Hudson-Champlain Passage, General Burgoyne intended to invade America's New England colonies from Canada. Seizing continental strong points along the way, Burgoyne's final goal was to capture the Northern Department's supply depot in Albany, New York. There, his forces would link up with the troops of Sir William Howe, commander-in-chief of all British land forces in the colonies, as part of the general's overall campaign to quell the colonists' rebellion.
When Howe embarked on his campaign for Philadelphia, this had been originally envisioned as part of a much larger operation, with the British column advancing southward from Canada, his column taking Philadelphia. Howe was then supposed to advance northward and join with Burgoyne, and from there control this north-south axis of advance, but also to cut off New England from the rest of the colonies. In British thought, New England was the cancer that was infecting all of America. If we can cut out the cancer, so they believed, we can save the rest of British North America.
Burgoyne's army left St. John's, Canada by ship and boat on June 13, 1777, and sailed south along the Richelieu River towards Lake Champlain. His forces included approximately 4,000 British infantry soldiers with artillery and another 3,000 German troops, often referred to as Hessians. A battalion of dragoons without horses accompanied their countrymen. British loyalists, who were familiar with the area, and Native American scouts were also expected to join the advance on Albany to swell the British ranks. General Washington was aware of the British invasion plan, but requiring all his troops for the defense of Philadelphia, he denied the Northern Department's request for reinforcements. Instead, he ordered Major General Philip Schuyler, its commander, to defend the Hudson-Champlain waterway by using Fort Ticonderoga as the primary defensive position. General Burgoyne commenced his attack on Fort Ticonderoga on June 30th. Major General Arthur Sinclair, commander of Fort Ticonderoga, faced several challenges in mounting an effective defense. Not only was the fort built to command the river's southern approach, it was also seriously undermanned and dangerously exposed to fire from the area's high point, Mount Defiance. After only 5 days of fighting, Sinclair ordered a withdrawal on the night of July 5th. At dawn the next day, the British occupied the fort. Recognizing that he was outgunned and outmanned as well, General Schuyler decided that instead of occupying nearby Fort Edward, he would focus his efforts on extensive counter-mobility operations. These included burning local crops and scattering livestock, felling trees across roadways leading to Albany, and damming brooks and streams to muddy the drinking water. He then linked up with soldiers from Fort George and withdrew across the Hudson River to the town of Saratoga on July 30th.
Advancing as he does, Burgoyne's taking the most expeditious way to advance southward. At the same time, He's also advancing further and further away from his bases of support, and so his lines of communication become extended. This means that they're much more subject to attack by colonial militias. As he moves further, he's also forced to send out foraging parties to look for food. As far as ammunition, he's got what he's got. He is reliant upon supplies coming southward from Canada, if he can get any. As he advances southward and the season begins to turn, it becomes much more difficult.
After occupying Fort Edward, General Burgoyne planned to solve his supply problems by ordering Colonel Friedrich Baum to lead a foraging expedition south towards Bennington, Vermont. However, Baum was killed during the expedition and his forces dispersed, leaving Burgoyne short of horses and rations. Over the next month, Northern Department troops also cut General Burgoyne's line of communication with Fort Ticonderoga. Seeing no other choice, General Burgoyne ordered his troops to cross the Hudson River on September 13th and advance south to Albany in search of desperately needed supplies. Anticipating Burgoyne's movements, Major General Horatio Gates, the newly appointed commander of the Northern Department, had prepared defenses along the road to Albany at Bemis Heights, a location 14 kilometers south of Saratoga. This naturally defensible terrain consisted of steep bluffs and ravines that extended to within 180 meters of the Hudson River, providing the Americans with ample cover and a significant elevation advantage. General Gates's engineers fortified his eastern flank with an artillery battery behind a line of earthworks that crossed the road to Albany. Another line of earthworks with a battery of guns was positioned further north near a small stream named Mill Creek. General Gates established his headquarters at the base of Bemis Heights, surrounded by a three-sided defensive breastwork that faced north. Batteries were placed in the center and at each corner, with the open south side protected by a ravine. He named the position Fort Nielsen, after the farmer who owned the property. It was approximately 1 kilometer from the Hudson River to the summit of Bemis Heights. Among the hill's deep forest growth, clearings were rare, except where a few farms had been established. One of them, known as Freeman's Farm, stood atop a forested ridge to the north of Gates's position. Its roughly cleared field was bordered on three sides by trees, with its open northern approach facing a steep draw known as the Great Ravine. Recognizing he would have to outmaneuver Gates' defenses in order to reach Albany, General Burgoyne planned to divide his forces into three columns. He planned to send the first column, led by Brigadier General Simon Fraser, west up Bemis Heights and then south along its ridge to attack Gates from behind his position. The second column of troops, under the command of Brigadier General James Hamilton, would also advance west, up Bemis Heights, then turn south and launch a frontal attack on the Americans' defenses. Burgoyne expected the two columns to roll up Gates's line east, where Major General Baron Friedrich von Riedesel's third column of German troops would defeat the routed force. On Friday, September 19, 1777, American pickets patrolling on the eastern bank of the Hudson River reported that the British were preparing an attack. Major General Benedict Arnold, whose forces defended Gates's western flank, recognized that Burgoyne's best chance of success would be to outflank his position. Unwilling to let the British make the first move, Arnold dispatched the 11th Virginia Riflemen under Colonel Daniel Morgan with five companies of New Hampshire Light Infantry under Lieutenant Colonel Henry Dearborn to reconnoiter the area around Freeman's Farm. General Arnold also tasked Brigadier General Enoch Poor's brigade to follow and support.
The militia at Saratoga cannot be underestimated. Without them, there would have been no American victory. So they fight alongside the Continentals. They're valuable in holding many of the defensive positions. In many cases, they were willing to advance and assume the offensive. Without them, no victory.
As British General Simon Fraser's column advanced on Freeman's Farm from the north along the ridgeline of Bemis Heights, Brigadier General James Hamilton's pickets approached the farm from the east. Attempting to advance across Freeman's Field, they were surprised by the advance guard of Colonels Dearborn and Morgan, who had arrived only moments before to occupy positions along the facing tree line. As the Virginia riflemen inflicted heavy losses on the British pickets, General Hamilton's main force arrived to reinforce their numbers. General Fraser's column also arrived and attacked the Continentals, driving the sharpshooters back from the farm and into the dense woods to the south. Hamilton's troops then took the field and held it. Shortly thereafter, Brigadier General Enoch Poor's New Hampshire infantry arrived and engaged the British, while the Virginians reformed and began sniping at British officers and gunners. Poor's infantry was soon overwhelmed by a combined force of British and German troops that outflanked them and drove them from their hasty position. On the brink of defeat and capture, the New Hampshire infantry was only saved by the timely arrival of Brigadier General Ebenezer Learned's brigade, who repulsed the British bayonet charges. As more American reinforcements arrived, Major General Benedict Arnold joined the battle. With the British soldiers beginning to falter, General Burgoyne encouraged his troops to hold the line. Having lost 19 of his 22 cannon crew members to the Virginia sharpshooters, and with more and more British soldiers being killed or captured, Burgoyne's force began to withdraw from Freeman's Farm. Meanwhile, General Riedesel, hearing the sounds of heavy fighting coming from the farm, left 1,000 of his soldiers to defend the road in front of Gates's position and led his remaining regiments uphill through the woods towards the battle. The Germans arrived just in time to turn the Americans' eastern flank, forcing them into the woods south of the farm. As darkness fell, Arnold's forces withdrew. Over the next 2 weeks, while still awaiting reinforcements, General Burgoyne established a front that extended east from Freeman's Farm towards the Hudson River. He placed his main camp, defended by 4,000 combined British and German soldiers, south of the Great Ravine. Batteries were placed at regular intervals along the front, and trees felled to establish clear fields of fire in front of each guard post. The British defense of Freeman's Farm was anchored around a formidable defensive position named Balcarres Redoubt that faced south and resembled a tall wooden fence with slits for muskets and oblique passages for moving on and off the battlefield. To further secure the area, a second defensive position named Brayman Redoubt had been established to the north of the farm.
By Gates' decision to allow Burgoyne to attack first, but also his decision to hold where he was, Gates is actually working at the campaign level with a strategy of attrition. So what he's actually doing, because of his own cautious, his own conservative nature, is to cause Burgoyne to eat his supplies, to starve his men out, to wear down their uniforms, to let Mother Nature work as an ally for the American forces.
On October 7th, General Riedesel, with a battalion of German soldiers, led a reconnaissance in force and occupied a clearing known as Barber's Wheatfield, located some 700 meters in front of Balcarres Redoubt. General Fraser's light infantry and soldiers of the 24th supported the Germans. At the same time, to the northeast, 200 German soldiers were positioned behind Brayman Redoubt. Learning of these developments, General Gates decided to attack Riedesel and ordered Morgan and Dearborn's advance guard to turn the Germans' weak western flank, while the two brigades of Generals Learned and Poor attacked from the south. As the advance guard attacked Fraser's troops, Poor and Learned's soldiers attacked Riedesel's force, capturing his guns while attempting to cut off his line of retreat toward Balcarres Redoubt. Riedesel's troops regrouped and held off the Americans' continued assaults. With his artillery horses targeted by sharpshooters and a steady stream of wounded retreating from the field, General Burgoyne sent orders for his forces to withdraw from Freeman's Farm to the main camp. Riedesel, also realizing his untenable position, organized his troops to fall back behind Balcarres Redoubt. When General Fraser rallied his soldiers to form a rear guard, he was shot in the stomach and carried off the field. As General Poor's brigade gave chase to General Fraser's retreating soldiers, General Arnold arrived unexpectedly. Taking command of Poor's brigade, he led an attack on Balcarres Redoubt, but failed to dislodge the British from their strong point. General Arnold then took command of General Learned's brigade and led an attack on Brayman Redoubt. As the Germans scattered to join Burgoyne's retreating forces, Arnold's horse was shot and fell on Arnold, breaking his leg.
You know, when we look at Benedict Arnold, granted, of course, he goes down in history, in at least in American history, in ignominy. Before this, however, one of the most aggressive American field commanders there was, trusted implicitly by Washington. He disobeys Gates' orders, and he will lead attacks against the British. He's wounded, of course, in battle, has a limp for the rest of his life. Without Arnold, or I should say because of Arnold, Gates was able to succeed at Saratoga. Much of Gates' credit is due to men like Benedict Arnold, but also Daniel Morgan, Enoch Poor, and other aggressive field grade officers.
On October 8th, with his original force reduced by half, General Burgoyne tended to the burial of his close friend, Brigadier General Simon Fraser. Burgoyne then ordered a retreat through torrential rain to the town of Saratoga. General Gates' forces followed. 3 days later, on October 17th, 1777, Lieutenant General John Burgoyne formally surrendered his army to Major General Horatio Gates.
Burgoyne's defeat was due to a number of things. One, the slowness of his advance, inability or reluctance of Howe to support him from the south, but primarily from the rising of the militias and their cooperation with the Continental armies and their holding fast in the battles at Saratoga.
This hard-fought victory, won by the combined effort of Continental soldiers and state's militias, marked a turning point in the War for Independence. This was the first time a British field army surrendered to an American commander, proving that when used as a foundation for the Continental Army, militias assisted in providing for the common defense, leaving no doubt that the roots of the victory at Saratoga lay in the militias. This early chapter in our nation's history reveals a strength that endures today and ensures that the total army has the capacity, capability, and endurance to do what the nation requires. Together, the regular Army, Army National Guard, and Army Reserve comprise a lethal and resilient force ready to meet the security challenges of the 21st century, just as it did during the Revolutionary War at the Battles of Saratoga.